Ready?
I was born ready.
I can honestly say that's the best news I've heard all day.
Joe Torti Show.
Kind of reminded me of a dark, gothic Neil Diamond.
That's like exactly what I'm going for.
This is the Joe Torti Show.
What show are you listening to?
Joe Torti Show.
I'm trying to be patient, but you're making it incredibly difficult.
I can say big loud things. I can be demonstrative.
Can we just end this already?
Now it's time. The Joe Torti Show.
No matter how bad it gets, never forget you could be Cliff Kingsbury and call a timeout right as your team gets a fourth down stop to end the half and give up a touchdown pass on the next play. Man, oh man, Arizona's having a tough go, but kind of the opposite of how the Sixers are going right now. And if you missed early on in the show when Devon and I first teamed up, I asked the question to D, and I want to pass it along to you as well, because I do think it's something that maybe is not the motivating, driving force behind what happened. I think it just got kind of personal between Carl Anthony Towns and Joel Embiid last night. I think that that's part of the reason why things elevated the way that they did. But this has taken on a life of its own where it's really resonated with the people of the city. And I do wonder if it's because the Sixers are just boring good. You know, there was a period where we watched this team and, you know, they weren't winning a ton of games. They were winning some games. I mean, like the first couple of years, like the first year really after the process ended officially. But we were more interested in whatever that was going on off the court or additionally, right? It was Dario and TJ McConnell's bro fest that everybody couldn't get enough of. It was Brett Brown's Australian accents. It was the unicorn tails, Loch Ness monster situation with Joel Embiid. Like, oh man, wait till you see him. He's killing everybody in the training facility. And everybody else is just like, yeah, we'll see. You know, when's he ever going to play? Blah, blah, blah. I do think that, that's part of the attraction when it comes to, we'll call it the scuffle. Because the team is off to a hot start. They're 4-0. And they've looked good doing it. Like we were talking about, it hasn't been a shocking or surprising or tricky start or anything like that. You don't get the fluky, lucky impression. You just get the impression, the idea that they're just a good team, right? You just get the idea that they're going to be one of those teams there at the end, providing they stay healthy and everything else, which is obviously a big question in an 82-game season. But what did you think of the scuffle? How did it resonate with you? If it resonated with you big time, why? How come? Because we've heard some people say that it's a big deal the other way, that now you're on the league's radar and that referees are going to call your games differently now, and that you could potentially become a target knowing that this kind of thing is possible. Are you coming from it from that perspective? 610-632-0975. We do have a couple of open phone lines, but we have an extended commercial-free segment here, so let's use it to talk to the people. Get some phone calls in. Chris in Williamstown leads things off on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Chris.
What's up, Joe?
Hey, Chris. Good evening.
Kind of was hoping to catch Devon, too, but, you know, it's all good. You know, let's go back. All right, we'll start with this first. Carter, you were talking about, you know, jumping back in on a bandwagon and having time. Well, you know what? I'm going to tell you something. Ever since I came out, and, you know, I can't use the word, but ever since I came out of, you know, where I was born, I always watched every game, and if I couldn't, I listened to it. I never once checked out. And for me, I can't bring these people back in. I just can't. I don't know. For some reason, I am what you're kind of like, you can't be that way. I am one of those guys. Like, I don't know. It's just strange for me.
Well, okay. So did you enjoy the Eagles Super Bowl parade?
I did.
Would it have been fun if there were like 1,000 people there or like 2,000 people?
I understand that too. In the same sense, if I could have been there, I would. But I had to watch it because of work reasons and being during the day. But, you know,
But that's kind of what I'm saying, right? It's like if you're saying that no one's allowed back on the bandwagon, like, I commend you for being locked into the Sixers during the worst possible time that you could be. I mean, seriously, that is a true statement about what kind of fan you are. But I mean, how many people are like you? Do you only want those people at the parade when they win?
Let's get on to the Sixers, because I mean, I get your point. I'm trying to be nice, you know, but it's, I can't get over it. So,
gotcha.
You know, let's go back to the Hawks game for a second. All right.
Okay.
Go jump to the second half. Sixers are coming, are down on the left hand side of the court. The ball gets stolen, and I watch Al Horford at the top turn around and say, guys, we got to be talking. We got to be talking. Where have we heard that before? I mean, I go back to a guy named Dario Saric, who 3 or 4 years ago did the same thing, you know, and that brings Brett Brown to the picture. Like, I hear what the other callers are saying, and just that on top of it, like, I think he gets bailed out by the fact that sometimes these guys make tremendous plays and bail him out when he makes a bad call or a bad judgment, or
sure,
he throws up something horrible. So in that sense, talent will help you look better, but how'd that help keep? Anyway, worst coach, Gabe Kapler or Chip Kelly?
Oh, man.
Now knowing what you know.
Now knowing what I know, I think the Chip Kelly's still worse.
Oh,
I think he's still worse. All what right. do you think?
We went to the playoffs year one. The Gabe couldn't even get there.
That's true. That's true. So, but I guess devil's advocate question, Chris. Should he have taken that team to the playoffs?
Yeah, he should have. Consider what you had, the wide receiver and running back. Yeah.
No. Gabe's first year.
Oh, had the team not checked out, maybe yes, they should have gone, because you had Cal, you had Jeff Hoskins, who you believed in. Yeah, I think they could have been better than they were had not had a major collapse in the second half and not had it from the first quarter of this season on this year. Yeah, we would have seen a totally different team.
Let's open it up in chat.
Good stuff. No. Thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, when it comes to Gabe, the personnel control, Chip Kelly had it, and that is what really, like, don't get me wrong, I don't think that Chip Kelly's a good NFL football coach, but that was the worst part. Like, once he took over team building, that was by far the worst, and I think that that made the biggest difference in the team. Now, who knows what Gabe Kapler would have done with personnel control, but that's why I lean Chip Kelly, especially seeing as not winning anything in UCLA either. I was legitimately stunned a couple weeks ago to find out that he had won a game.
I think culture is more important than scheme. So pretty straightforward, black and white.
Okay, Chip. Yeah, except culture is more important than scheme. But scheme is way more important than the players, than whoever you have. So by that logic, culture is more important than the players. Which, you know, totally, 100% makes sense. Good job, Chip. Chris in Stratford's next on The Fanatic. What's up, Chris?
What's up, buddy?
How are we doing?
Good. You know, listen about the Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
Thank God, baby. If we didn't have Chip Kelly, he wouldn't have won the Super Bowl. No.
You're not wrong.
You know, karma is karma. But, you know, when I think about, you know, we're talking about the Bad Boys, right? And Do you remember Rick Mahomes?
Remember Rick Mahomes? Yeah.
Yes. So I was a big fan with him coming in. And, you know, what I guess my point is, are we the best defensive team in the league in NBA?
Well, I mean, you look at the points that they're surrendering, Chris. I mean, thanks for the phone call. Everything's been right around 100 points. I haven't looked at the stats. Let's take a look. Let's see the team defense leaders in the NBA. The Sixers would have to be close to the top. Let's see. For this season, and this is according to points allowed, the Sixers are fourth. Utah is allowing 92.4 points per game in five games played. Four games played for Orlando, 94 points. Los Angeles Lakers, 98 points. And the Sixers, 100.5 points. So, pretty good. I'll say this. I think it's harder to score on the Sixers than it is to score on those other teams. Although 92 points per game for Utah's, you know, that's pretty darn good. So that's kind of saying something. But yes, to answer your question, I mean, I think that of the teams that are considered contenders. I don't consider Orlando to be a contender. I consider Houston, or rather Utah, to be a contender. And Utah, a strong defensive team, I think that matters. I think that the Sixers are better than them defensively. I think that the Sixers are better than the Lakers defensively. The other teams in the area are Oklahoma City, Denver, Boston, Atlanta. That's the top eight. I do think that the Sixers are better than those teams defensively. I haven't seen a team that's been this big. Well, first of all, there's never been a starting five that's this big. But the team in general just has length and size and athleticism. And you work Thibault in there. And there are a lot of different things that this team can do to defend you that a lot of other teams just don't really have. The weapons that they can't really bring to bear. Chuck in Las Vegas is next on the Fanatic. What's up, Chuck?
What's up, JT? How are you, man?
Doing great, man. How are you?
I'm great. I'm enjoying this 76ers team. You know, if I want to go back to the off season real quick. Parting ways with JJ Redick. I was really excited about that at the time, and it has just played out so well. Because you get rid of one of the worst defensive two guards in the league. You bring in Josh Richardson and Thibault. And, just defensively, this team is just incredibly fun to watch. I don't know if anyone pointed this out today, but we actually have, the top two leaders in steals in the NBA. Ben is second, and, Thibault as a rookie is actually leading the league, averaging three steals per game.
Pretty remarkable.
It really is. And,
you look at what they're doing blocks-wise. You look at what they're doing defensive rebounds. Like, this is a tough team to play against. They really are, Chuck.
And, you know, like this Thibault kid, you know, he comes off the bench and you just see the energy. And you see Josh Richardson, you know, the passion he's playing with. And, you know, for many, many years, right, when people talking about the NBA, the old cliche is, you know, oh, they don't play defense or whatever. You know, it's an 82-game season, Joe. So this might sound ridiculous, but, you know, do we want these guys going 110% every single night? I mean, as a fan, yeah, obviously I do, but realistically, I also understand that it's a very long season. So, you know, through the first four games, their effort has been just awesome. And, you know, I'm kind of wondering what you think about that, if you think, that's going to be par for the course every single night. They're going to come out with that effort. I just kind of wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, absolutely. And I do think that, especially in years past, Chuck, that would have been something that I would have been more concerned about. But with the veterans that they have on the team and with how we've seen their plans for example, Joel Embiid's load management and things like that, I just think that there's going to be enough in the plan that, yeah, while the team itself might be going a million miles an hour, that you're going to find enough rest and enough spots for guys that by the end of it, you're not completely worn down. Is that fair?
I think that's kind of how I feel as well. And, you know, just to reiterate, man, just really excited about this team. You know, I think like you and Devon said, or I at least heard Devon say, this team's headed to the finals.
Yeah.
The only question for me is who we're playing. Is it going to be Lakers, Clippers? Who's it going to be? But all right, thanks, man. Thanks for taking my call.
Chuck, you got it, man. Absolutely appreciate you listening from Vegas as always. I don't think it's going to be the Lakers. I do think it's going to be the Clippers. I think that's the best team. Things are already kind of going crazy in Houston, as we anticipated that it might. Did they score 317 combined points the other night? Them in Washington? I think they set a record for like regular season points in a game combined. That's crazy. But that doesn't tell me that, for example, that a defensively stout team like the Sixers are should be worried. Like, they're not going to lose 130 to, 102 or whatever, or 160 to 102. Because that's what Houston did. There are not that many teams matchup wise that I'm concerned about. And by the way, I do think that Milwaukee's a good team too. Before the season, and I'll stick to this. Before the season, I anticipated that the Bucks would get the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, but it doesn't really matter. It's a crash course, collision course with the Sixers, and I think that that's a really bad matchup for the Bucks generally. Now, I could be wrong. I like the Bucks' offseason moves more than most, even losing Malcolm Brogdon. I think they did some other good things to reshuffle and keep everything together as best they could. But I like the matchup against last version of the Sixers. I like that matchup for Philadelphia. And I like it even more now that the team's kind of been recrafted in Elton Brand's image and generating the kind of athletes that he wants to have and the kind of people that he wants to have on the team. 610-632-0975. We do have a couple of open phone lines, so grab those now as we're taking a look at the early season of the Philadelphia 76ers. We're talking about the scuffle, and obviously they showed some fight, some toughness, some grit that we talked about being a potential hallmark of this team, but hadn't really seen it in practice yet. Kind of came to the fore yesterday. Matthew in Philly's next on the Fanatic. What's up, Matthew? Matthew, you with us?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for answering my call, man.
You got it.
You know, I heard, you know, just got in after getting off of work, and it was funny. I was at the Sixers game yesterday. It was awesome.
Okay.
I will say, just from seeing the scuffle, just want to talk about the scuffle and then ask you a question about the Sixers.
Sure, yep.
From seeing the scuffle, I don't know what you could have asked Joel Embiid to do. I felt like Carl Anthony Towns was holding his arm repeatedly, and he was trying to get out of it, and then next thing you know, things get heated, and Joel's in a headlock. And when you look at it, at least when I saw it, I didn't even understand kind of why. I mean, I knew Carl Anthony Towns was, like, Joel was kind of giving it to him in the game, but I didn't see anything back and forth between them that would have said that they were going to do that. So, I mean, that's just seeing it from my own eyes. You know, of course, I don't know it personally, but I thought that was kind of interesting. Because what do you want the man to do? And then you take them both out, which I think is the fair thing to do, I guess, in an NBA game. But then at the same time, are they both going to have the same type of punishment after that? Or how's it go? I've been at work all day, so I don't know if they got a couple of games taken away or fined or whatever it was. But it just feels like Joel was kind of, he was just kind of doing his job, and it ended up getting into being a fight. And then I wanted to ask you, just from watching the game so far, I've noticed with the 76ers defense, and just to see if you think this is right, it seems like they turn it up in the second half a lot. Like, it seems like their games are close, and then all of a sudden in the second half, they turn it on. Especially at home, the Boston game and the Minnesota game, our second halves, it seems like we're blowing the team out every single time. And then also, I just want to get your opinion on that, and also ask you if Matisse Thybulle to you, do you think his offense this year will kind of pick up as the year goes along?
Okay.
Thank you for the time, man.
Yeah, you got it, Matthew. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling. I'll take them in order. So the first question was regarding the second half and the fact that the Eagles really kind of tightened the thumb, or the Sixers rather, kind of tightened the thumb screws in the second half on teams. And I do think that that is, first of all, accurate from you, Matthew. And there have been some exceptions where they have been able to take care of business early on, and then, you know, they have some lapses in the third quarter, but it's been pretty rare. It's been pretty rare that those kind of things have happened. So I think the part of it is identifying, outside of the game plan, what the teams are trying to do, how they're attacking you and making adjustments. Matisse Thybulle happens to play larger roles in second halves of games than he does in the first half so far. So it seems like that's something that also could play a factor in that. And then just generally speaking, getting into the flow of the game, you see the energy being maintained by the Sixers. I get the impression that the Sixers, due to their length, due to their athleticism, are a little bit more built for the long game than some of the other teams that they've played against so far. So I think that that's it with question number one. Question number two about Matisse Thybulle and whether his offense will, you know, kind of lift over the course of the season. I'm not sure. I don't think that it'll hurt you offensively. Like, I don't think that he's a black hole. I do think that eventually you look at the shot. There's nothing wrong with the shot. Eventually he starts knocking them down from the outside in catch and shoot situations, right, where he's spotting up and it's either an offensive rebound gets batted out to him, or, you know, one extra pass or whatever. I do think that. I don't necessarily think that they're going to be like running offense for him routinely, just because you've got so many other really good options to go with when you're trying to load up on offense. But I do think that he will be a solid enough offensive player that you won't really have any issues that way when it comes to, like, I don't think you'd have trouble using him offensively. Let me put it that way. I don't think that he turns into a liability when you have him out there offensively. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. You can also reach out on Twitter at Joe Torti at 97.5 The Fanatic. We do have a couple of open phone lines, so you can be in next. Alex, I'm going to get to you on the other side. I want to give you your full time here to get your points across. 610-632-0975. It's the Joe Torti Show. Hanging out until midnight. Josh Rabick is producing. More from Josh. I want to know about leaving the bowl out, whether that was my mistake or whether I should just generally, you know, not think that people are going to just totally upend it and take it all in the first 25 minutes that it's out there. It's the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Covington from well beyond the arc, way off to the right. He shot it from Delaware County and he missed it to Bucks County. Here's Korkmaz. That's how you do it. Show him, Furkan. Three ball, Korkmaz.
Tom is just the best. Tom McGinnis. I'm Joe Torti. Not the best. Second best. Well, Josh Rabick is here. Third best. I'm Joe Torti, third best here, 97.5 The Fanatic, only behind Tom McGinnis and Josh Rabick. Fascinating
That's
stuff.
That's not true!
Fourth best? Man, I'm going further down the list, Josh. That's tough, man. Come on, I got a family. Take it easy. Got to buy diapers and stuff. Let's go to Alex in Haddon Heights next on 97.5 The Fanatic to get back to the Sixers. What's up, Alex?
Hey, Joe, how's it going?
Awesome. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Yeah, you know, I mean, the big thing last night, I heard people panicking and saying, oh, you know, we can't have five games. He's going to be out. You know, if you lose the number one seed, this and that. There, two things that people have to realize here about this season. The Sixers, after how Kawhi was handled last year by Toronto, that was everything about how they crafted the model of this team, and that's why Horford was such a priority. Mm. They're not going to let him play more than 50 regular season games. I guarantee that's a fact. I mean, through, you know, phantom injuries, whatever it is, things like that.
Sure.
So if it would have been a five-game suspension, whatever the case, you can't worry about it. This was all built around him being healthy in the playoffs. They're going to, even with him missing, you know, 30 games or so, they're going to sleepwalk to 50, 52 wins. And they're going to be a top four seed. And it doesn't really, they're good enough. Look, you saw, you know, with what LeBron did a couple years back when Cleveland was a five seed. It didn't make the finals. Like, it doesn't,
right.
It's not the end of the world. And there's nobody. When you look around this East, if there's somebody you're scared, even if you have to go, but that they have home court against you, you're afraid of going to Milwaukee. I mean, that team's paper thin.
Right.
I saw them last night. They are really in trouble. I could see that going south. And so, I mean, who else really worries you? That's the question.
Right. Especially, Alex, in the Eastern Conference, right? Like, there's no one in the East that concerns you. You worry about the West when you get there. I mean, you make it to the NBA Finals. That's a successful season to begin with.
You only got to play one of them. I mean,
right.
That's it. So other than that, yeah, I mean, look, even going to Toronto, going to Boston, going to whoever, you know, it's Milwaukee. They'd still probably be favorites, even without home court.
So talk about Milwaukee a little bit, Alex. What makes you think that they're not going to be as strong a team this year?
I watched last night. I think Brogdon is a very big loss for them. I think Eric Bledsoe, they paid him, and I'm concerned in watching him play. Maybe his game comes around, but it's without him being you know, at the level that he was, they're just, you know, Middleton, he's a good player, but mm-hmm. I mean, if he's your second guy, you know, and then you look at the rest of it, and they lost a lot of athleticism. But, you know, when you're playing, I looked at a lineup last night when it was Cannot and Korver and Robin Lopez mm-hmm. in meaningful minutes.
Yep,
that lineup's going to get eaten up.
Sure,
you know, even with Giannis, so, and that's a lot. Even that guy's great, but that's a lot to put on him to carry those guys. So I would favor the Sixers definitely if they met.
They certainly do seem deeper, Alex. Thanks for the phone call. Good stuff, man. Josh, do you agree? Do you think that there are depth issues in Milwaukee? And if that's the case, you know, do you think it matters? Because a lot of people would say, yeah, they're not as deep as the Sixers are, but they do have a guy in Giannis at a guard position, quote unquote, who can, you know, kind of take the game over at any time.
I mean, it is going to come down to what Giannis is going to deliver, but they're not quite as deep as what they were last year. So if you're going to ask me if I think they're quite as strong as they are, but you also have to factor in Giannis's development and what he's going to end up being, because he started to develop a little bit of a shot here. And I mean, we talk about Ben Simmons all the time, but Giannis has developed a little bit of shot and he's starting to take it. So they're going to go as far as Giannis is going to take them. But am I concerned with the Bucks right now? No. With the defense the Sixers are playing, we're just tougher inside. And I think when you have an elite rim protector like Embiid, it does limit some of what Giannis can do.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially if what Giannis talked about at the end of last season ends up to be not true, where he was talking about going back to early on in his career where he was shooting more mid-range jumpers and he wanted to get back to doing that kind of element to his game, which has kind of gone out of vogue and out of style with a lot of people who are, you know, big thinkers offensively in the NBA. So
the analytics guys in the league are rolling their eyes right now.
The long twos. Yeah. So it depends, right? If you're committed to going to the hoop, you've got to meet Embiid there. So, and Al Horford too, Ben Simmons. There's a lot of trees that you've got to navigate whenever you're trying to figure out what to do with the Philadelphia 76ers. And I think that whenever you think about it, right, at the core, we are defensive-minded people. In Philadelphia, defense will always speak more to us than Gabe Kapler offensive analytics and seeing a lot of pitches and stuff like that, and Chip Kelly's zone read, million miles a minute offense. It's cool. And it's fun, and you know, we'll watch and pay attention and say, ooh, what's that? But if you know, you'd look back on, of all of the teams that didn't win, the Buddy Ryan defensive teams get mentioned all the time as the ones that resonate with the people. People liked J.J. Redick scoring a million points from three last year. That's true. Way more calls about how Redick can't defend anybody, how strong the Sixers are now defensively, now that he's gone. Just at the core, and I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I'm saying that it's core to our identity here in Philadelphia. Defense just speaks to us more. And I think that it's merited. I think that it's worth it, because looking at the way that things are set up across the Eastern Conference, there are a lot of teams that can score. I do not think that there are a lot of teams that can defend the way that Philadelphia can. Philadelphia presents a lot of problems. And that's, we didn't even mention Matisse Thybulle coming off the bench. If they go beyond the starting five, you've got a certified guy who's a defensive stopper you can put in. The only thing that kind of throws a small wrench in it, and this is minuscule, except for the fact that it does regard a first-round pick, the news that Zaire Smith is in the G disappointed me. I thought that this, you know, was... Not saying that they made the wrong decision by sending him to the G, but when you're a team that's ready to compete now in a first-round draft pick in the lottery of recent vintage is going down to the G League, that doesn't really line up with your timeline all that well. The problem that I have is that the Sixers are ready to compete now. You've got all hands on deck, and now you've got Furkan Korkmaz in there instead of Zaire Smith, right?
Like Zaire.
Yeah, Zaire. Exactly. Now, I think it could ultimately be good for Zaire Smith's progression and his development. It is always better to play than not to play. Always. Every single time, no matter who you're playing against, what league it is, who else is playing there, what your scheme is, what it's not. It's always better to be getting actual game reps against somebody else trying who doesn't know your same exact playbook, who doesn't know exactly what you're going to do, et cetera, et cetera. There's only so much that you can really accurately simulate when you're talking about going through practice and walkthroughs and scout team and all that other kind of stuff, right? There's only so much that you can really do. But in games, even G League games especially, Zaire Smith will get the opportunity to get more work in. But it does. It's fascinating to me that he ends up getting sent to the G. And Brett Brown was, you know, pretty honest about it and pretty direct about why. And that's exactly what he said. He said, let's just start with playing. They're not sitting on the sideline watching the starting five and the backup five play. They're playing and they're also young. And if that's my son, I'm their coach. It all points back to how do you play? So they're going to be in an environment where they're going to play more. And that's what makes sense for Zaire Smith. You just need to get him into games so that, I mean, we talked about it, right? Oozing potential, kind of a tweener position-wise. There are a lot of things that you can get figured out in the G League. You can figure out more of your offensive plan. You can figure out what positions you defend most effectively at the NBA level. There's a lot of good that can come from the G. So don't get me wrong. Don't get it twisted. It's not that I'm saying, oh my gosh, he's going to the G. What are they doing? It could be the best possible thing for his development. And he could end up being a big part of the Sixers' long-term plans. And I'm not just saying this because Devon's my friend, because I like working with Devon or anything like that. But it seems to me like you're immediately seeing the rewards of a guy whose game is ready to go for something that you need with Matisse Thybulle. You're seeing that he is, you know, NBA ready from a body perspective. From a game perspective, he understands what his role is, what he can bring to the table for you. You have to wonder what it would be like, and you know, who knows, because of all the trades and the shaking and everything that's happened, you don't know if this would ever end up happening, but you do wonder what happens if Mikal Bridges is still on the Philadelphia 76ers at this point, and what the team does look like there. Because that's another guy, played 4 years, veteran, played on a role, or played a role on good teams. So there you go. And I mean, you don't want to just, you know, say, ah, well, whatever. But that is something that you think about when I'm looking at him. I'm like, yeah, he's 20 years old, Zaire Smith. He probably belongs in the G League anyway. Makes a lot of sense. Dude's born in 1999 versus some of these other guys who are ready to step in and make a difference for contending teams. Maybe they're not franchise centerpieces like a lot of these one-and-done guys, but Matisse Thybulle is going to play a big-time role on the best team in the Eastern Conference. 610-632-0975. It's the Joe Torty Show. More after this on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torty Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. It's a good thing for Arizona that timeout before the half didn't come back to bite them. It'd be a shame if they were down 28-14 at this point. So here's the history of Joel Embiid versus Karl Anthony Towns on Twitter and on social media. This is on Instagram. Joel Embiid, December 13th, 2017. Euro stepping our way through Minnesota, and we ended up raising the cat last night. Hashtag the process. Carefully chosen picture with Jimmy Butler and Carl Anthony Towns in the background. Okay? January 5th, 2019. It was an honor to be part of the third stringers and get a win against real NBA starters. Hashtag the process. Damn. October 30th, 2019. Great team win. I was raised around lions and a cat pulled on me tonight. LMAO. Give me, got his mama giving middle fingers left and right. That's some serious real estate. Hashtag fight night. Hashtag I ain't no. You know what Mike Scott says. And then this was today, Halloween. Happy Halloween. That tough guy act ain't cutting it. You know what you are. You know what you've always been. A bleep. Say it louder for people in the back. Being kicking your tushy. And pretty please make the playoffs before you talk. It's a known thing that I own you at Carl Towns. Wow, man. That's rough. I mean, Carl Anthony Towns did make the playoffs like 2 years ago, didn't he? Did the Timberwolves make the playoffs? I don't mean to, like, you know, be the accuracy person. But I think that they did. I feel like that happened 2 years ago. Let me see. That would have been 2017. Where does the time go? No, it wasn't in 2017. Got to think about this. That's what I thought, too. Do I have that right? I got to think about the NBA playoff history here, but that's what I thought. I was like, Embiid's normally on top of this. It was 2017-2018. Okay, all right. So it was the 2018 NBA playoffs. All right, so that was the only factual error. And some people are postulating, by the way, Josh Rabick, that is why Joel Embiid allegedly deleted the tweet. Because he was like, I did make the playoffs. Darn. Now, the real move is to just go back, delete it, and then write the same thing, except write the playoffs more than once, and then just...
I do the same exact move.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. I butcher a tweet all the time, quick delete it, and I just retype it up.
You're like, hey, you know what, though? Most of that was really good. The idea was really strong. So there you go. I like this team a lot. Like Devon was saying, I like this team a lot, too. We both have them going to the NBA Finals. But there was a lot of talk about Brett Brown in particular. This, you know, well, we'll talk about it like an hour and a half is what it's been. And then that does raise the question, and it's crazy to look ahead. We're four games in. But NBA Finals are bust at this point for this group? And if it's bust, is it bust for the head coach? I mean, you talk about the stakes being raised and elevated. That's exactly where we are. I think about Dwayne Casey often. I wonder how Dwayne Casey could have possibly seen, I'm sure he didn't, possibly seen getting fired after what he did. How could he see that coming? With Brett Brown, unfortunately, I feel like he might have been able to see it coming. Seeing as, like, the team had no reason to, but did come out and say, oh, yeah, Brett Brown is our coach for next year, when he had more years left on his contract. That was almost like, he's our coach. But, you know, the fact that we're making this announcement tells you that we are feeling the heat. And we're going to pass the heat right along to you. You know, like one of those car commercials that... Oh, we're cutting out the middleman and passing the savings on to you. You know, like those. That's almost the impression that I got from the statement that was made after the season. Because, like, you're a Sixers basketball fan. You know what the rumblings are. You know what the expectations are when the process is paying off. and you're reaping the rewards, and you've got Elton Brand in, and Elton Brand's building this brand new huge team. And then you're just like, well, by the way, Brett Brown is also our coach. And, you know, so we just want to give him the full endorsement that he's our coach next year. And Brett's like, wait a minute. This happened to Greg Popovich? Does Greg Popovich come out? I mean, the Spurs haven't won in a little while, right? It's been a couple of years at least. And nobody comes out and says, yeah, Greg Popovich will remain our coach. So I think from that perspective, feeling the heat has to absolutely be a factor already in what this is. Already. Now, does it stay that way? Who knows? But that's kind of what I'm digging at, is that even if you build up to be the number one or number two seed in the entire NBA, say that you have the best record or the second best record in the entire NBA, you're in the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. You make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. If you lose, that means that you lost a series that you had home court advantage in. Is that a fireable offense? It's progress, though. You made it past the second round where you were before. We have these heightened expectations for where the team could go or where the team might go, but isn't any progress good enough? This is where it's going to start to get a little dicey. And I know that Devon and I always talk about this. It's not just about the results. The eye test matters. How did you get there? What did you do? What did you run into? Who got hurt? Who got hot? Who just got ice cold? The Sixers, for what it's worth, it suggests to me that the Sixers take the long view, because it would have been easy to look at Tobias Harris and be like, Tobias Harris is not what we ordered. You know, we got it in the Amazon box. This is not what I expected. I'll tell you a story about that, too. Well, I would say that I'm going to reveal my inner nerd, but I think you know already. So I'll share that story in the 11 o'clock hour. But similar to this, it would have been easy to look at Tobias Harris's shooting percentage when he was a Los Angeles Clipper, and then to look at his shooting percentage when he was a Philadelphia 76er in the playoffs and be like, there's a 10-point difference here. This is not the guy that we thought we were getting. However, instead, the Sixers decided to make him the dude. They gave him the whole bag, the whole thing. So that tells me that they look at it from a wide sample size perspective. And that means basically that when you look at it and you think this is a team that's improving, you had second round playoff exits. The team that you lost to last year ended up winning the NBA Finals. And then you make it to the third round the following year. I think, and I don't know, this is not an official report or anything like that. You rely on the beat writers and everybody else for that. But it suggests to me that that means that Brett Brown's job's safe. It suggests to me that they view that as progress and building up towards something bigger, building up towards something that is, going to be a gradual buildup, rather than these frantic, sudden breakthroughs that we've seen for some of these other teams. For example, whichever team LeBron decides to throw his services towards, usually. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. We've got Warrior on Warrior Crime, where Kevin Durant is talking about his relationship with Draymond Green. I want to get into that. More Sixers talk. And then, of course, I've got to get the thoughts on the bowl etiquette. Is it okay to leave the candy bowl out if you're not going to be around? Should kids be trusted to take, like, no fewer than 15 pieces of candy? Should they leave the actual physical bowl, or should they be using that to collect more candy? I need to learn about how Halloween works now that I'm an old man here. It's the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Yeah, this sure is the Sixer station. Only unbeaten team in the Eastern Conference. Joe Torti here with you, 97.5 The Fanatic, hanging out for another hour until midnight. Hope that you and yours are having a very, very fun Halloween. Are you a big Halloween person, Josh? And it seems like people that are out there are either like Halloween is their favorite holiday or like I hate Halloween, I can't stand it, and I want nothing to do with it.
Well, let me tell you, Joe, in the Rabick household back in Reading, Pennsylvania, Halloween is the holiday. We watch every single Halloween there is, even the bad ones, the Rob Zombie ones.
Okay.
We go back, we watch the terrible Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street. So yeah, Halloween is our holiday.
Okay, so is it about the movies and stuff like that, or are there parties? Is it festivities otherwise? Do you guys deck out the house?
Yeah, we used to deck out the house. We'd put up the fake tombstones.
Okay.
That would have, you know, the clever sayings, you know, that'd be like, Mama loves Papa, Papa loves women, Mama caught Papa with two girls in swimming.
Oh. Oh. Love it.
So then you have trick-or-treaters that are, don't get me wrong, they're wandering around the front yard, but it'd be cool because you have the fog machine in the front yard with the tombstones and everything. Uh-huh. So you have the trick-or-treaters read it. Nothing's too crass or anything like that. It's all good fun.
Yeah, yeah. My dad pushed the boundaries sometimes. I mentioned I have a fog machine. My dad asked to use it, and I'm 19. And I'm like, well, to this point in my life, you've literally purchased everything that I've ever owned in my entire life. So, yes, Dad, you may borrow my fog machine, which is technically your fog machine. Had a big truck and parked it on the lawn. And literally, when trick-or-treaters, he would wait for them to ring the doorbell, bang on the high beams and rev the engine in neutral. So there's that one. There's last year, literally last year. I am 30. All right. Stands next to like a suit of armor or a scarecrow. I can't remember what it was on one side. And he's on the other side, standing perfectly still with his executioner's axe. Ding dong, jump out, scare everybody to death. That lasted for like literally 20 minutes because my mom was like, we're going to get sued. Like, we're going to get sued. Somebody's going to have a myocardial infarction and we're going to have an issue here. The number one all time at the Torti household. We designed, I kid you not, an elaborate pulley system and rigged it up such that when literally trick-or-treaters, we established a ridiculous cutoff age. The cutoff age was like if you were older than 8. Like it was such a stupid, like that was a terrible cutoff age. If you were older than 8 and you rang the doorbell, a full scarecrow dressed as like Dracula is coming off of the roof down on top of you as you ring the doorbell. Like, that is the level of terror that my dad delights in when it comes to the neighbors.
How does he know the kids are older than 8? Is there a background check on the way up the freaking driveway?
Yeah, it's terrible. It's just the height. It's like, yeah, that person's probably not a toddler. They're probably good. That is... I come from... I don't like scary movies, I don't like to be scared, that kind of stuff. And people are like, why, Joe? It's so fun. I'm like, you don't understand what life was like growing up there.
If you no longer watch PBS, then Papa Torti's bringing the hammer down.
The scarecrow hammer. And I don't know what's worse, them watching this thing literally drop down on them, or then watching it like slowly raise itself back up onto the roof for the next people. And then, you know, my dad would never threaten kids. But he'd lean over and he'd say, "And if you tell anyone, we'll know." Literally, I was like, oh, jeez.
Your dad seems to be a very common topic among shrinks in the area.
Jeez. Yeah, well, there you go. There's his... I normally wouldn't talk about my dad on the air. Give him too much pleasure. But 5 minutes on his most hallowed of all days. There you go. Did your dad get into that, or were you most of the scaring type? You said he was pretty calm.
Yeah.
Tombstones wise.
Well, he was calm, but he would get involved with stuff. So we used to go to the hunting cabin sometimes around the Halloween time period. Yeah. And we were told, and my mom would get involved too, which makes it even worse. My sweet, wonderful mom would get involved. She'd start telling the ghost stories around the fire about the little blueberry girl. And then my dad would disappear into the woods, and we'd hear shrieks out, and my dad would come running out in a blanket, and my mom would be like, "There's the little blueberry girl."
Oh,
and
my.
Oh, yeah.
So your mom's in on it.
Yeah, she's in on it.
Oh, geez. She's an accomplice. Oh, wow. I'll tell you. You think that's the one place that you could rest safe? It's with mom. Nope. No, you cannot.
And the worst part is you try and come into mom and dad's room then at night because you're scared. No, no, no.
No.
You go back to your room.
Yeah, you're on your own, kid. Paul Arch at PaulArch65 tweets in, he was answering my question about the bowl dilemma, because if you missed it, I left out a bowl. We had a Halloween parade, and I wanted my kids to get to march in the parade and see all the other kids in costume or whatever. So we missed the first round of trick-or-treaters. But by the time we got back, we had left a bowl of candy out with a note saying, you know, "Happy Halloween, please enjoy," whatever. I should have expressly written, "Please take one," and then some smart aleck would have taken one bowl. But the and it would have been Josh. The entire bowl was empty, including the note. So I just know somebody picked it up, just dumped it in the pillowcase, and kept it moving. And I don't know what I should do. Paul says, "The first year you dress in costume, sit still in a chair holding the bowl with the sign, you scare the crap out of kids. The following years, put the dummy in the same costume out with a bowl and the sign, you should be good then." That's a great call. That's a great call. It would take something, and I mean, I would feel borderline creepy for the rule abiders. You know what I mean? Where I sit there with the bowl, they just take the one candy, and I'm not moving. I'm just watching them take one piece of candy.
You know? See how that ties into the MB topic. You fight so you don't have to fight in the future. You scare the kids so you don't have to scare them in the future. The shield of Achilles.
That's it. We brought it full circle. There's no line-em, but it's Torty After Dark at 11:08. Rabick filling in admirably for D in this role. And we do. We bring it full circle. That's a beautiful thing. That's a good idea by Paul. I always like being involved in the scaring. Setting up rigs and fog machines and music and stuff like that is cool. Being actively, directly involved in the scaring is fantastic. It's really, really good stuff. 610-632-0975. If you have Halloween traditions don't involve pain and cruelty to animals and stuff. I know there are some psychos out there right now. Feel free to share. 610-632-0975. Dennis from Ben Salem tweets back in, "Next year we're going to meet up after Halloween. Trade you all my Twix and candle wax for anything else." Whoops, did I say candle wax? I meant candy corn. Ha ha. I don't know. I could take or leave the candy corn. There's sometimes... This has happened to me where it's come and gone in phases where I think it's gross. And then there are sometimes where I'll try one and I'll be like, "I need 8,000 pieces of candy corn." And then it'll come back the other way. And I'm like, "Nah, I don't think I would do this again." I don't know what happens. I don't know what happens to me. But that's the way that goes. With the Sixers, as we were talking about, bringing it full circle and back to the Sixers. They were what I would call pretty emphatic in making their statement yesterday. But it was costly, right? Because it's a 2-game suspension for Joel Embiid. That means he's missing the Portland game. And then he's missing the game on the road at Phoenix. So he'd be back after that. And there are some pretty good teams that they're playing on this road trip. The other thing that you do have to mention that some other people have also brought up, though, has been, you know, some load management things would come up anyway, probably, even though he missed the second game with the injury. He's got two more games that he's going to be out now due to suspension. Not sure if or whether there are any kind of appeal plans, what that they would be and when that would be. But you're going to see him missing half of the first seven games or whatever. Math doesn't really work, but you know the idea. Almost half. So you're doing some load management early on in the season. You say a couple games here, a couple games here. Look, I think that it matters because the Sixers are going to be there at the end. Whether they're the first seed or the second seed or even the third seed, that's okay. As long as all of the pieces are there at the end, I'm confident that this team has the kind of game that can go on the road, that can win in hostile environments, that can hold up at home when a team comes in and is feeding off of the Sixers home crowd and trying to come out and be giant slayers. I just think that this team, from what we've seen early on, and once again, very, very early, small sample size, but I've seen enough so that I feel confident, at least in saying, that this is a team that would be able to withstand all of those challenges. Do you think so? 610-632-0975. Let's go to Chase in Southwest Philly on the Fanatic. What's up, Chase?
Hey, what's up, Phillips? How y'all doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm chilling. Yeah, I ain't really got no crazy Halloween stories with my parents and everything. But I did want to mention a little bit about the Sixers. And I agree with you. I feel really good about us. I think we do got, like, a game that can travel and a game that can take us deep into the playoffs. I want to say one thing that I really, really like is that Al Horford grab. Like, losing Jimmy Butler was like, I want to say I was happy about it, but picking up Al Horford is like, okay, I really don't regret it at all because, for one, he has a really good game. He's 30, but for two, we don't have to play against him, and I think that's a really big thing in the East.
Well, I mean, he was one of the only guys in the entire NBA who literally could go one-on-one with Joel Embiid defensively and be okay. But he's the only one who held up. I don't understand how or why, but he did.
Exactly. That's the one thing I really don't get, though. How he is such a, I don't know what to call him, because he was just a good defender. Maybe he knows some better tricks and maybe whisper something in your ear that make you don't want to play no more. Who knows? But one point that I do want to make, though, I feel like the most important, the X factor to this team is Tobias Harris. And I think he needs to realize that, because pretty much he needs to be the almost an athletic version of J.J. Redick. We need him to catch the ball and be ready to score every time, because Embiid, he's going to do his thing. Horford, he's going to do his thing. Simmons, you know, he needs to stop dribbling in and turn around, but he's going to do his thing. But if Tobias Harris can be consistent and give us, honestly, I want at least 18 a night from him. He give us 18 to 25 in that range, I think we wouldn't chip.
How much of it, Chase, has to do with the contract, where that's what you expect from him now?
And not even to say that, because honestly, I don't think he's a max player. I don't think he's a max player. But the fact that he got max, he got to realize, okay, I am a max player, because he got the max contract and play like a max player.
That's exactly it, Chase. You think he'll be able to do it?
I think he's able to. I think it's really his mindset. I don't know. I feel like somebody need to get in his ear and tell him, like, bro, you gotta do it. It's on you. If you play, we win. If not, then it's going to be a problem for us.
Well, it's a worry. That's a worry that I have, Chase. And thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. Because I feel like this is an easy team to take a back seat on. I feel like this, when you've got Joel Embiid and you've got Ben Simmons, I feel like it is entirely possible for you to just say, all right, well, you don't need me. I got this. Oh, don't get me wrong. I'll be here for you when you need me. And, you know, when you want me to step up, I'll do what I can. But I think that there's an entire possibility that Tobias Harris in particular could be of the opinion that, like, hey, you know, this is not my team. Even though I am a max player, this is not my team. This is not my my responsibility to shoulder the load. But to Chase's point, there are very limited numbers of perimeter scorers. Al Horford is what I would call a plus 3-point shooter for his position. not a plus 3-point shooter objectively for the league in terms of a guy who knocks stuff down. Embiid, I'm sorry, people argue with me on this all the time. The numbers say that the more that he shoots, the worse that he shoots. The larger the sample size, the more the percentage goes down from 3-point land in particular. He's not it. Josh Richardson, I would like to believe, is going to shoulder a lot of that load from the outside, but he shouldn't. Not when you thought that Tobias Harris was a max player. Tobias Harris, you've got to be getting something from him. Now, the one thing that I think he's been more committed to than he was last year's rebounding. I think that he's really been getting after the boards even more than he was last year. Maybe that's just a perception thing, or maybe it's just noticing next to all of these other really big guys that Tobias Harris is also a bigger guy. But it seems like he's been crashing the boards just like the rest of them. But people ask questions about who's going to be the perimeter scorer and where's that outside shot going to come from, and are they going to have a go-to guy in the event that they need more than two, or that Ben Simmons, or rather Joel Embiid, is not going to be there near the end? Well, these are all questions that Tobias Harris could answer, and in a perfect world, he would answer by saying, yeah, of course, even though I'm going to technically be the second or the third or the fourth offensive option, probably the third offensive option, I'm still going to be able to get mine, and I'm still going to show why I'm a max player in this league. I bet on myself, it worked out, and now I'm going to show everybody why. Your phone number to join the conversation, 610-632-0975. That was a good call from Chase, for sure. Because Tobias Harris is one of the very few, and we talked about how consistent the team has been and how little surprise there is. He's one of the very few wild cards, even with what he did last year and what he's done for his career. It's not like he's a total mystery. He's a total unknown. But on a team like this, he kind of is. On a team like this, how's it going to work? And I would argue that he has not been more important from a fit standpoint and from a spacing standpoint. He's never been more important to a team than he is this year. I could not be more excited to see how he handles that and what it plays out to be, because if he is able to take that step and if he is able to be the guy that they need him to be, then I mean, you talk about a team that's going to give a lot of people trouble in the Eastern Conference. You're just talking about a team that's going to give a lot of people trouble, period, if Tobias Harris is also knocking down shots on the outside. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Reach out on Twitter as well, at Joe Torty, at 97.5, the Fanatic. Jasper Lucas tweets in, still waiting for the Tobias Harris who shot almost 42% from three-point range with the Clippers. That's what I'm talking about. And I don't think that based on the way that the Sixers are built, that Tobias Harris is going to take a million threes, certainly not as many threes as he took with the Clippers. So having said that, these should be quality shots in rhythm, off a good pass, or in transition, whatever it is. I feel like if there's ever a year that he's going to get back, it's this one.
And I think we want to see more of that third quarter against Detroit. As you said, he right. takes a back seat, but in a game against Detroit where you don't have Joel Embiid, that's one where you needed him to step up, and you're going to need him to step up in these two games without JoJo.
So do you think that their ceiling is affected, Josh, if he is not able to take it back shooting-wise, only shooting-wise, to where he was with Los Angeles last year? Do you think that's a big negative for them?
Yeah, because it was probably one of the bigger questions coming into the season is, what is Tobias Harris? I don't think we had that fully answered last year. And now when you look at the length and moving him a lot more times to the three, obviously when you don't have Joel in the lineup, you're going to probably see him a lot more at the four.
Right.
But you do need to see him be able to space the floor, like you said, and he needs to hit that shot, because if he's not hitting that shot consistently, we've seen how Richardson's gotten off to a little bit of a cold start from beyond the arc. I mean, who are you really going to be leaning on?
Yeah. And like I said, Horford and Embiid, while I applaud the fact that they are willing to shoot, are not, in my perfect world, the guys who are actually doing that shooting. What I would say is that you've got Tobias Harris, who has a track record of being a good shooter. He's done it in the past, and he's as strong a candidate as anybody to do it into the future. Boy, what did you talk about not knowing what Tobias Harris is, though? It was amazing how much of a slam dunk it was to keep Tobias Harris over Jimmy Butler if the regular season ended, you know, and you were like, all right, it's time to make a decision now. And then the playoffs started, and Tobias Harris goes away, and Jimmy Butler steps up, and he becomes one of your most important players. And in crunch time, he's got the ball. He's like your point guard when you need a bucket. And the whole script got flipped. Until it resulted in two parties. One party was, you cannot allow either of these guys to get out of town. Or there was the Joe Torti party that was like, I don't know about either of these guys, to be completely honest with you. Too much inconsistency. Now, obviously, the sign and trade netted them Josh Richardson. That helps out big time in terms of filling the Jimmy Butler void. And then there's the re-signing of Tobias Harris, which, hey, young guy, part of your core, could still be exactly what you need him to be. But with Joel Embiid out, like Josh just alluded to, these would be pretty good showcase games for what it looks like when he's asked to be one of the primary scorers on the team. When he's asked to take that big step up and be the guy that they kind of run some offense through, and it's not just the spare wild shot here and there. Because I think those kind of moments are the only way that you know if consistently you're calling stuff for Tobias and he hasn't had plays run for him until the third quarter and you still have faith in his ability to take care of that kind of business when you do with the ball in his hands. 610-632-0975, your phone number. Top aboard the conversation. Reach out on Twitter as well at Joe Torti at 97.5 The Fanatic. And Josh, newly updated Twitter handle at Josh Rabick. Wow. I mean, we are ready to go. We're clicking on all cylinders on this high quality program. 610-632-0975. We got about 35 minutes left in the show. So plenty more action. And if you want to get in, we do have open phone lines for the first time all show. So you'd be up first on the other side without a break. If you want to weigh in on the Sixers' early season successes, the scuffle kerfuffle, and then everything else in between with your 76ers. 610-632-0975. It is the Joe Torti Show on 97.5. The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic. Thank
you. Welcome back. It is the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Hanging out until midnight. Josh Rabick is producing this evening's program. Just watching, and I haven't watched the entire game. The 49ers acquiring Emmanuel Sanders is exactly what the doctor ordered for that team. Literally exactly what Jimmy Garoppolo needed. It was the one piece that they were kind of missing. Emmanuel Sanders in his San Francisco 49ers debut. Oh, it's debut. Sorry. 7 catches, 112 yards, and a touchdown on 9 targets. Yeah, that works. That works. And it makes you think, you know, Emmanuel Sanders, pretty good deep threat. Oh, they just salted the game away. Good on them. It does make you wonder if the Eagles should have been more active near the trade deadline, knowing what the asking prices were, right? So you think about the Emmanuel Sanders deal. And, you know, people were talking about the Mohamed Sanu trade kind of wrecking the market and having everybody on lockdown. things like that. Emmanuel Sanders' deal kind of became a take it or leave it offer, is what they said. I thought that he did a pretty good job overall. That crazy trade, though, I mean, I think about it, and that crazy trade is like a move that Howie Roseman should have made. A third and a fourth for Emmanuel Sanders and a fifth. I wouldn't exactly call that, you know, having the market locked down just because Mohamed Sanu got a two. Maybe I just have values off. Isn't Sanu an inferior receiver to Emmanuel Sanders? Shouldn't Emmanuel Sanders have been thought of as an upgrade there? So the idea that Sanu for a two, well, Emmanuel Sanders is 2 years older. Is he better? Josh, you had like kind of a curious look on your face. You think Emmanuel Sanders is a downgrade or is he an upgrade?
Oh, no, I gave you a straight yup.
Yeah, you think so? Yeah? Okay. So if that's the case, then that doesn't seem like that was a lockdown kind of situation. Yeah, you had to give back the fifth. But still, it's a guy who's got some speed, could play. And the reason that I'd be interested in that kind of trade is because after DeSean Jackson comes back, you could still have some use for Emmanuel Sanders. You don't have to just look at it and say, oh, well, you know, you don't want to overpay when Deshaun's coming back anyway. First of all, I don't know that DeSean Jackson is going to be DeSean Jackson when he comes back. And the other thing is that we've seen that this Eagles team does have just a dearth of speed. They have a real speed problem. And that is something that I think ends up making the offense look like everything's compressed, says that it doesn't work, etc.
Bond guys are slow.
Yeah, and Byrne, you're absolutely right. I also wanted to, I teased this earlier, and I'm sorry that we didn't get to it earlier. I want to get to it now. I was reading this and watching it too, kind of at the same time. It was on First Take on ESPN, and they had Kevin Durant on. And you'll remember Kevin Durant and Draymond Green had like that very public argument where they were going back and forth at each other and things like that. Well, Kevin Durant addressed it, and he was asked about it today. He said, I wish that wouldn't have happened. I feel like that was a situation that definitely could have been avoided. It really came out of nowhere for us. Everybody outside the organization was looking for something to tear us down, and I think they used that. I think that's true. That just brought in a firestorm where every day was about my free agency. Every day was about my disposition as a player, what I look like on the bench, what I look like in the game. And it opened up a lot of nonsense that could have been avoided, and me and Draymond talked about it. Asked more pointedly by Stephen A. Smith whether the dispute was a factor in his decision to leave for Brooklyn, Durant said, a little bit, yeah. For sure. I mean, your teammate talks to you that way. You think about it a little bit. Like I said, we talked about it. But definitely, for sure, it was a factor. I'm not going to lie about it. What do you think of that when you hear that? Because to me, I hear that and I think, you are Kevin Durant. You took all of the garbage that you took leaving Oklahoma City to go play the kind of game that you wanted to play, right? You didn't care what anybody said about you, despite the burner accounts. You made it all the way through that. And you're worried about an argument with Draymond Green? That's like the big reason that everything that came to a head? Turns out, no. Turns out that was a little overblown. Because then he would go on to say, I just felt like I needed a switch. I felt like a lot of stuff in Golden State reared its head. I felt like I was just, it was going to be the end no matter what, especially for that group. Sean Livingston was retiring. Andre Iguodala was getting older. Our contracts were going to stifle the team and put us in a hole to get other players. It was time for all of us to kind of separate. So that is what Kevin Durant ended up saying. And I hope that is way closer to the truth as being the reason why Kevin Durant would leave, as opposed to, I was upset that even after Draymond Green and I talked about it and we talked it through, I just couldn't get over it. Like, if that's the case, Josh, that'd be a really, really bad look. And that feeds into kind of every negative stereotype that people have about Kevin Durant and the way that he handles adversity.
It almost sounds like it's a way to give your jab on the way out. Even though he's probably over it and all that type of good stuff, we've all been in arguments with friends and whatever, and you get over it, you move forward. But if you revisit the situation that made you argue with them, it kind of reignites a little bit of that anger. And maybe that's what's happening here, but to what you're saying, I hope, truthfully, he was trying to go to a different setting, because I think he had his mind made up at the beginning of the year that he was going to go somewhere else. I don't think he was thinking the Nets necessarily at that time, mm-hmm. but I do think he had his mind made up that he was going back to the East Coast.
A lot of cool stuff going on in Brooklyn. I've got friends who were born in Brooklyn, said could never go back there now. They wouldn't let me back in. It's like it's too cool in Brooklyn now. So I'm sure that Kevin Durant's going to have a great time. But you're right. And that leads me, by the way, to something I wanted to share. I heard somebody say this to someone at a wedding. And it's common advice, so it doesn't matter who it was or where it was, because people say this all the time. It's terrible advice. It's awful relationship advice. And I want to stop it right now. I heard someone say never go to bed angry with the person that you're with. And from me to you, that is god-awful, horrendous, terrible advice. One thing, like Josh just said, you know, you think you're moving past the argument, you go back to the root of the argument, everybody redoubles and gets into their bunkers, and now you're fighting again. I've lived that. I've absolutely been through it. Hey, let's talk this out, because I really don't think that you're understanding what I'm saying. No, I understand. Your point of view is stupid. Oh, really? It's stupid? And then you live in this place now, right? So there's that. Number two, you might be fighting because you're tired. You might be fighting because there are some other extracurricular activities that have been going on. Things that sleep would actually cure. I would argue that we've all probably had something happen to us where we're like, wow, that is like, I mean, it's not the worst, but it's like one of the top 20 things that's ever happened to me in terms of bad news. And then you sleep on it, and you're like, okay, well, that actually wasn't that bad. It's terrible advice. Stop doing it. Look, better advice is this. Don't let an argument change your opinion about somebody until you've slept on it first. That's better advice than don't go to bed angry. Because you might wake up the next day like, hey, you know what? I really am a piece of garbage for leaving my underwear all over the floor. I mean, like, really? Like, yeah, she probably shouldn't have made that big of a deal out of it, but it's kind of gross. You know, like, that's like the way that actually naturally ends up. So that's unasked for advice. But I heard somebody say that to somebody, and I just cringed. It's like, oh, man, I don't know if that's good advice at all. Don't go to bed angry.
Do you think it also played into extending the feud, since it went a little bit further into the season because it was a national news story?
Of course.
Of these two going out. Imagine if you get in an argument with your spouse and she gets the best of you in front of everybody.
Right.
You're going to carry that with you for a long time.
Well, so there's Draymond Green, who is also talking about this today. And he's talking about, like, yeah, I was wrong. And like part of it was, I was like, oh my God, the Golden State Warriors are going to side with Kevin Durant on this and blah, blah, blah. Like both sides, by even acknowledging it and not just saying, you know what, all that's behind us, brothers fight, families fight. And by the way, that's how they tried to handle it at the beginning. And people just continue to push and things like that. But I think that it did hurt the team. I'm not going to say that that's what has wrecked the team, because holy cow, does Golden State look bad. That looks like a terrible team who just lost their best player with Steph Curry breaking the hand. So you got him out. You've got Klay Thompson out. You got Draymond Green actively complaining that they haven't gotten one practice together as an actual team. Which, valid complaint. It's October 31st. You should have had one practice or something like that as the entire team. Final score, 49ers 28, Cardinals 25 on Thursday night football. Good competitive Thursday night football game. Those are kind of rare, to be honest with you, but still marred by a lot of these really lengthy, insane reviews. And I'm sure that I'll be talking about that with Pat Callahan on Saturday for This Week in Pro Football. Looking forward to talking about this with Pat as well. Okay, so coming up, We are going to, well, first of all, Josh, you have a question from Twitter that you need to address on the other side. We're going to take a walk around the show and talk about how we got here and break down the program. And also, we've got one more thing. Happy Halloween to you and yours. Hope that everybody's in a candy coma at this point. But for those of you who are not, final segment is coming your way next. 610-632-0975. This is the Joe Torti Show, hanging out until midnight. Keep it locked right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Final segment, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Josh Rabick is producing, doing an outstanding job, as he does. So many choices for one more thing. You'll have to wait and see what we've got here for this one. But the things that I wanted to get to, first of all, first and foremost, I've gone this entire show without mentioning this, and I should have. Join Eagles safety Roddy McLeod in his Race to 23K campaign for cancer research. He's teamed up with the Fanatic and the American Association for Cancer Research to raise $23,000. The AACR is the first and largest organization dedicated to finding cures for all cancers. With your donation comes automatic entry to win a drawing, or to a drawing to win the Ultimate Birds fan experience. So if you enter with a donation, you could win a Birds fan experience, which includes two tickets to the Monday night game on December 9th, field passes, and a VIP tour of the ESPN film truck. So go to 97.5thefanatic.com/donate and make a donation today to support cancer research. Really good cause there, and obviously good stuff from Roddy McLeod. Good player doing good stuff. We talked when Devon and I first teamed up here about the Sixers, and the conversation was on. And the main thesis was that Devon was happy about the fight, what I'm calling the scuffle kerfuffle, which is the feedback to the fight. A lot of people were talking about that and talking about whether it was a good thing or a bad thing. I'm okay with it. I wouldn't like seek that out. I think that that's, you know, something that I guess is more of a necessary evil than what I would consider to be something that you seek out and that you count on and you want to become part of your team identity. So I think that that's part of the discussion that is relevant, is that do you really want this group to be thought of as fighters, or more as like, don't mess with this team or else, you know, they'll be able to stick up for themselves and hold their ground. So I think that that's a relevant distinction to make. Either way, regardless, that kind of branched out to Brett Brown and whether he was the coach for the job. And it's amazing to me because the postseason and the championship results are so important that the proof's in the pudding. Like, there's no reason that people should be looking and thinking, well, the Sixers are 4-0. I wonder if their coach is in trouble. They're the only unbeaten team in the Eastern Conference. Now, 82-game season, considerably longer than four games. That's just math, I think. But the issues that you have with the coach, it's not just about this year. It's not just about last year. Some people have been looking at Brett Brown and thinking that this guy might not be the guy for them, their choice, for quite some time. So we fielded some discussion on that. And then, of course, about Joel Embiid and whether the team would be able to continue to push the envelope, make it all the way through to the NBA Finals, and what that team would look like once they got there. So there you go. That is the Devon Givens and Joe Torti crossover portion of the program. We also got into some of what I'll call the off-the-field stuff. Had all of my candy. Well, that's not true. I had reserves. So 25% of the candy that I had allocated for the evening for all of the children to come around and trick-or-treat, swiped by one thief. One of the first four visitors who came to the house took the bowl, opened up the bag, dumped the bowl, including the little note that I left, which I thought was the most disrespectful part. Put the bowl down and walk away. Solicited a lot of really good stuff, a lot of good feedback and answers for how to avoid that and whether that's something that should be expected. Also got into Halloween candy. Josh, are you a Twix person, or are you, like others, disrespecting and sleeping on the Twix?
No, I love Twix. I'm a right and left Twix fan.
You'll go with both of the Twix?
Yes, sir.
I was thrilled. First of all, Luna Lovegood showed up at my door, which is awesome. Who shows up for Halloween as Luna Lovegood from Harry Potter? Everybody wants to be Harry or Hermione or all these. Luna Lovegood shows up. I'm like, yes, that's the best costume that I've seen. And she and her friends go, we only like left Twix. I'm like, okay. And then the one friend goes, I don't want right Twix to be left out. I'm like, this is just a ploy to get more Twix. I like it. Here you go. See, I'm very generous with the candy. Just don't swipe the whole bowl. Talked about, traumatizing children for the better part of 2 decades. So that's something that at some point I'm going to have to come to grips with either myself, my creator, something like that. I'm going to have to atone for that somewhere. But my dad will have taken care of that first. So at least the groundwork will have been laid that way. The general candy discussion, general sexist discussion, talked about Draymond Green, Kevin Durant. I think that we've caught up to the present. Okay, it's time for the often imitated, never duplicated, the world famous, the one, the only, one more thing.
But there is one more thing.
Well, I think one team took themselves out of the Garrett Cole sweepstakes, and it happened last night during the World Series. Here's the deal. I know that you're in the actual World Series and it's Game 7. Just so we know, you know, Patrick Corbin was the guy that Dave Martinez was looking at. He's like, yeah, a starter. We need somebody to start mowing down these Astros hitters when we go to the bullpen. Let me go to Patrick Corbin. Meanwhile, A.J. Hinch of the Houston Astros had Garrett Cole. This is almost not necessary from this account called Houston Horn, but they tell you who Garrett Cole is. Easily considered the best pitcher in baseball in the bullpen warming up. They had him warm up and then passed on him. Didn't use him. So that move, think about how costly that is, Josh. Because Garrett Cole literally has the entire offseason staring at him. He's got the Yankees salivating to throw all of the money in the world at him. The allure of the West Coast. And, of course, those plucky Philadelphia Phillies and manager Joe Girardi waiting with open arms for Garrett Cole. What do the Astros look at here? They're looking at losing the World Series to a team that some people were like, yeah, probably not a playoff team when they were like 11-30 or whatever they were. And also losing the best pitcher in baseball. Well, you didn't put him in, you lost the game, and you're probably going to lose the pitcher because he waited like, what, 25 minutes after the game to be like, hey, thanks, Nats Astros fans. I've really enjoyed playing here. Thanks. It's been a lot of fun. You talk about how to mismanage the short-term and the long-term. Astros found a really good way of doing that last night. So I think that not only did they cost themselves the World Series in a Game 7, also might have cost themselves Garrett Cole. Do you think this is a big deal, Josh? Did you read into that?
It's a huge deal. As Herm Edwards once said, hello, you play to win the game. That's the whole point. Why are you holding back? You know he's also going to be a free agent. Why are you not going for everything now? You're in the World Series.
I'm telling you. It's unreal. And when you saw Garrett Cole's reaction, he's warming up. He's like, I'm going in the game. And like, nah, Garrett, you're cool. Just stay warm. What? Meanwhile, he's watching Patrick Corbin. Like, that guy's a starter too, right? Mowing down our dudes. I'm telling you, you could, if you put in Garrett Cole and he has a legendary relief performance, you save the season, you win the World Series, and you might even get to keep the player. You might even get to keep him when he sees that he's on the cover of the championship Blu-ray, right? They don't do DVDs anymore.
And as you know, we have these games on here in the background.
Yeah.
I looked over last night and I see Garrett Cole warming up.
Yep.
Didn't think anything of it. We go back to the show and then find out later on he never even came into the game.
Never made it. Unreal. There you go. All right, that's it. The one, the only, one more thing. What I would call a rare sports one more thing situation. Jasper Lucas with one more tweet. You need to get a Ring or some other video surveillance device for the candy thief. And I love Twix, but Milky Ways are my favorite. I also like the Milky Way. I feel like they're underrepresented now. They're trying to do like the Milky Way darks, the Milky Way, like a little fun size things. I like the full, like straight up Milky Way. I enjoy that. And I do have a Ring, actually, as fate would have it. I'm having some issues with it because it recently has stopped ringing in my house. And I think that somehow it got unwired from like where the doorbell is. And now it's on battery power. But either way, the other thing that a lot of people don't know about Ring is even if you have them, it's a subscription service to get video playback. So you can see like what's live and what's actually going on now. But if you want to go back and review, you can't. So that's also something that that I've got to work my way through and figure out here. But Jasper, thanks for the tips. Really appreciate it. Josh Rabick, outstanding job producing. Thank you very much for all of your hard work this evening.
You got it, dude.
And to all of the callers and tweeters, my co-hosts, thank you very much as well. I will be back on the airwaves for the Donut Show tomorrow. That is 6 to 7. And then after the game wraps up until midnight, looking forward to talking to you then. Happy Halloween. Stay safe out there. It is the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.